Okay. Now that you're listening, what we're going to do tonight is we're going to begin a series entitled I Need a Little Christmas Now.
Yeah.
This is our holiday rotation, which means that we meet for 3 weeks. It runs us down to Thanksgiving. We take a break. We'll meet. We have some parties that get tagged in on Wednesday evenings. And so by the time we're done, this really is...
2 weeks.
What's that?
We only really meet for 2 weeks.
Is it?
Yeah. 2 weeks, Thanksgiving, get ready for the Christmas store, then the party. So you got to cram it all.
There's a really short series, Ed. And we're going to get ready for Christmas really quick. But let's just kind of prime the pump and kind of get ready for what for us is a very busy time of year, but a great time of year, one of our favorite times of year. Some of you will remember this. I broke this out because I was just in Christmas mode. You'll remember our very first Christmas together. I touted the fact that while First Orlando had their singing twin Christmas trees, we had this.
Hi, I'm Douglas Fir. Up on the housetop reindeer farm.
They don't have this at First Orlando, I'm telling you. So for the next 2 weeks, we're going to watch this. And we're going to watch him sing. But what we are going to do is we're going to think about Christmas a little bit. No kidding. And as we do, as we begin, you guys are talking, and that's good tonight, and that's good. I also would remind you, if you go back and look, that the Mount of Transfiguration, which we talked about on Sunday, I always get tickled, especially, and I can't remember the details as I was kind of sitting there thinking, but one of the things that happens, and one of the studies I did on the Mount of Transfiguration, it just dawned on me that as they came off the mountain, the first thing that happened is they ran into a demoniac that they were trying to cast an evil spirit out of. And isn't that always the way it is? You come off the mountaintop and you run into a lunatic somewhere, right? And so that for most of us, that really is what our mountaintop experience is for. When you have that moment, you just go, oh, this is so good. I hope this never ends. Well, enjoy it because you're getting ready to run into a lunatic somewhere that you're going to have to go face to face with. But as you're thinking about Christmas, we're going to start getting into Christmas mode here. What is your favorite Christmas memory? It could be anything. It can be big. It can be dumb. It can be, it can be a mountaintop. It can be insignificant to the rest of us, but we'll go, okay. When you think about Christmas, what is your favorite Christmas memory? You got one somewhere, I know. Somewhere, everybody's got them.
As a child, one of my favorite memories is my brother and my mom. We were very, very small. And I don't know how I remember this, but we used to make popcorn and string it up as garland for the tree. And for, several years, but I remember, for some reason, that comes to me because I remember my mom's face, my brother's face, the hot chocolate, the playing games coming up to Christmas Eve. That's one of my favorite things of Christmas.
You still do that?
What did I do to you, Leanne?
Wait,
what else?
The church I grew up in, we always had a midnight service. Mm-hmm. Always enjoyed that.
We're not going to do that.
No. Nice try, John. Nice try.
Family would go?
We weren't Baptists.
I remember my mom playing Silver Bells on the piano almost every day. And so I'd come home from school or after school because she worked, and just entering the house, I didn't realize then how much I loved it until I got to be an adult and would walk in the house and go, oh my gosh, she's playing Silver Bells. What's her favorite thing to play? But to this day, it's still my all-time favorite non-Christian song because she played it all the time.
When I was a little kid, my mom brought us over to my Aunt Pat's house because they said we may have a visitor. Now, so you're not confused with the story, my dad's name was Arthur. And so we're there, and all of a sudden, Santa comes in. I am thrilled. and my cousin yells, "Uncle Artie!" And I am slow, so I literally thought my dad was Santa. But anytime I see someone, my dad always played Santa for us, so I just thought that was like the best thing ever. So that was my favorite memory.
Wow.
What else?
I always like the smell of cookies being baked when I come home. Your house would smell like chocolate chip cookies or date nut rolls or
can't go wrong there.
The smell, you can always smell it.
Sure.
Waiting for them to break out the fruitcake and the rum cake.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Fruitcake, that gift that goes on you.
Okay, wait a minute. It depends on who made the fruitcake.
That's true, that's true.
It depends on who made it now, okay? Because I had a great aunt and uncle in Georgia that made them. Boys, there are nothing like the fruitcakes you get now.
Who likes eggnog?
Oh, wow.
All right.
Is that yours, eggnog?
I love eggnog. Mm.
What else?
Say Christmas memory.
When I was younger, I don't remember what the money went for now, but our church was doing something that was benevolent, and I remember my parents sitting us down and saying, "This year, as a family, we're going to decide to give money to this, so you won't be getting as much." And that just being like one of the best Christmases ever, and it seemed like, I don't know if God honored that or what, but it's like, there's a lot under the tree for us giving money away. I just remember that being kind of cool that my parents decided to sit down and let us be part of, what do you guys think about doing this? And yes, that would be okay with us. And God kind of doing the miraculous there.
I remember my cousin and I, he's the one that's, well, he's in Germany, but as kids, he and I would always be the one that go get the Christmas tree. And out where we live, the pine trees are like, you know, there's some of them shaped just the right size. And he and I would both cut one for our house and one for his. And so we would take them home, and he'd help me start decorating ours at our house. And then we'd go to his house, my aunt's house, and do the same thing there. And that was, I mean, he and I did a lot of things together, and that was one of the great things that I remember we did together. But also, my mom... We were, for some, I don't know, I guess like I said, it was a God thing, but there was these two little girls, they weren't family, and it was someone that mom met at a school, and we went to their house for Christmas, and she said, she had presents set aside, gave us ours, but the other gifts were for them, which was, you know, we thought was really cool, because she's playing Santa, and we get to their house, and I mean, there was nothing. There was nothing for those kids at all. A tree wasn't up or nothing. But it's just the fact that to see my mom smile and to see those kids smile, because we handed them presents out of the back seat of a station wagon, and they thought that was the neatest thing in the world, you know, and we got to play Santa for somebody else. That's really, really, really cool. House, no lights, no tree, no nothing.
All the family getting together. Mm-hmm. We had family up north. They would come down, and my aunt would make this special coffee cake. And he still, if I don't make it, my brother gets upset. My kids get upset. So, it, I mean, the tradition with the family is just wonderful.
The best memory that I have in Christmas happened last year, actually. And it was the first time the kids had been able to really, I guess, you know, we prep them what was going to happen, you know, and all that. Because I don't remember from one year to the next, you know. And so we told them, you know, hey, you're going to come out, gifts, you know, be under the tree or whatever. And so they're super excited, obviously. They're, you know, bouncing off the walls, like, waiting, you know, because I've got the video. So Brittany's back there in the hall with them, and then they take off running. They're screaming. They come around the corner, and I'm thinking they're just going to, you know, do a, you know, flip into all this stuff. And they just locked them up, and then silence. And it was... They didn't say anything for like 30 seconds. And then all of a sudden, Jed goes, "Fucker! Fucker!" And I was like, all on video.
They start arguing.
And then they start arguing. And they're like,
"No, that's for us. No, it's not.
No, yeah. You stop. That's
great.
Best memory ever.
Oh,
man.
It's so fun.
I just think when you're real young, it's like believing in Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
The thrill of believing in him.
We still have to believe or we don't get anything.
It's a tough thing.
Our children still spend the night at our house.
Hey.
And everybody sleeps in our house the way others have to.
Of course.
And Ashley, my middle one, is the first one up. This morning, trying to wake the babies up and wake everyone up so she could see what Santa brought.
Of course.
Yeah.
I think that's the neatest thing for anybody to have, if you have the opportunity to have all your family there. That is really, really neat. You know, you get up and it's just a morning where, you know, we always make it a time where we're there, we have breakfast together, we read the Christmas story all over again together before we open any gifts. Everybody's sitting around on the floor, couch or whatever. And it's just, it's a magical time. It's a peaceful time. And it's a time where the world is silent. Nobody interferes, no phones, no nothing. And it's just that peace, and it's wonderful. I mean, it's just that moment of just, wow, we got silence, and it's good. It's really good.
The first year that we did the Christmas store, just the, you know, now we're kind of like, we're pros, we'll show you how it's done. That first year, the anxiety when people come, can they find the warehouse? Well, look, put somebody out on the road. I mean, it's just, I would not do that again, but I wouldn't mind, you know, you're talking about the feelings recapturing it, but that first year, because I mean, you know, I mean, the first year of that, and the first year of Face the Fear of probably for this ministry, the two that I kind of go, that first time out the door, because, you know, I mean, what were you going to expect? I don't really, you know, the first was getting the gifts in, you know, it's like, and then you kept raising the number. I remember it was like 25 or 30.
I think we started, at 50. Yeah.
Well, I know originally what was quoted was less than 50. And, you know, we're kind of doing the bit, but, you know, you talk about these mountaintop experiences, things you don't want to forget, but you don't want to forget the feeling of that first. Well, they come and the excitement and everything else. I mean, I think it's a lot better atmosphere now. We kind of know what we're doing. But I think we were as nervous. If you remember, because it was like there were a few phone calls.
Oh, scared that
for and the scamper. You know, this is back in the days of who gets paid that week.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah. The first year we were running, pretty thin. It took everything we had to get across the line.
But then also the moment when it was all done.
Yeah, it's still pretty. I mean, I get that vantage point, pastor privilege, where I get to stay in that hallway, usually where the gifts, you know, I get to direct traffic between rooms and stuff like that. And so what I do is I get, you know, I'm not in the room as folks are finding stuff, but I always kind of get that coming as they come back out and they're excited about what they've gotten and they're telling you and explaining how it was the perfect gift and stuff like that. And so I get to either participate or I get to be an eavesdropper in those conversations. And I'm always amazed and I'm always stunned. And I get in, and there's a whole, I mean, for me, it's just fun. There's a holy hush, I think. Because I really just want to take all that in, because that really is sacred ground. And I realize that it's, for me, as a pastor, I realize it's because of all the things that happened to get to that moment. Not just that moment, but everything that happened that everyone has done to that point, from the time that they got in the parking lot, that they got to ride around the building, that they got to have breakfast, that they got to interact with you guys at breakfast, till they got to go down and shop, and somehow, some way, all of that was working where God was orchestrating them finding that gift that they needed for their teenager, who we have no idea who that teenager is. And there's something that's supernatural about that, that I always want to make sure I never miss, because it is real easy to miss in the mechanics of we're doing an event, and it's a Horizon Ministry, and it's big. And it just continues when they're grabbing the cookies and they're, you know, they're putting it all together. There is something very sacred that takes place, because we are inviting them, and we are becoming a part of their Christmas story. And I don't know if we always realize how big that is. I mean, it is that moment where we get to step into their world, and we get to take footsteps along with God through their life. And I think to myself, my gosh, this is pretty cool. I mean, if we never did anything else, this is pretty good. You know, this is a moment. And the thing is, it happens 100 times. And you know, and there's always the anxiety. I mean, I do remember first year, man, it was loose sleep. We're not going to make it. We've overreached. And of course, I'm a real big one on overreaching. I'm like, oh, God can do anything. I mean, I've taken you guys some places that are nuts, and I appreciate you going with me. But this is one of those times I'm like, oh, Lord, what have we done? Thinking, what's going to happen if we don't, you know, have enough, and what's going to, and it happened. And then if you guys remember, we were doing the store 1 year, and then the next year we were doing the Samaritan's Purse boxes, and then we would come back to the store the next year, because we were smaller then. We were taking a pretty big swing, and we were putting a pretty big good dent in the ship, trying to get this thing across the line. And so in horror, you know, we're getting ready to kind of do this. We make the jump to kind of, okay, we're going to do it every year, because we were finding out that you know, in that off year, still no one had stepped up for the teenagers. And so we're like, okay, if God's called us this, we just have to do it. It's a step of faith. So we did it, only to find out that Leanne upped the number on us without asking anybody. And so when I heard that we were now going to do 75, you know, I heard that, and everybody kind of in the room went, oh. So did I, because I didn't know that either, because that was just a mistake. She had written it wrong on her piece of paper. And so she just rolled that out, and everybody just went, okay. And so we were just off and running, and then the number's up to 100. And so we continued to do that. And then, you know, and again, God has just blessed that, and he'll bless it again. You know, we're 3 weeks out. We're a long way to go. If you haven't started shopping yet, please do. Please pray. But I mean, if you've never been a part of that, you know, find a place to plug into it, because there's a lot of little nooks and crannies that you can plug into. It is awesome. It's cool. It's fun. Wouldn't miss it for the world. It's pretty neat.
My very first experience with this Christmas store, I was like, what have I gotten myself into? I don't understand what's going on. Yeah.
And you know what? No one else does either.
But the very first person that came to me to wrap a present looked so much like my niece, and she was in tears. She said, my son would not have had any gifts at all. I had no way to provide him with anything. I don't know how they picked me. I don't know how I'm here. But this is the most wonderful thing. I mean, I was hooked.
Yeah.
I was ready to sit down and cry with her. Sure. You know, give her a hug. And yeah. But, I mean, that really, as a first experience, that was, you know, that was an end.
Yeah. It really is amazing the way it works. But, yeah, I'd forgotten about that first or two you said that. And now I'm like, yeah, I remember that. That was pretty anxious. Thank you, guys. I mean, there's something about Christmas that is unique to any other time of year. For us as followers in this room, you know, we understand the meaning of Christmas. We understand what this season is about. I'm a Christmas guy. I love Christmas. I love everything about Christmas. I really do. And I just think it is the most amazing thing. It is a worldwide, global, enduring celebration of an event that most people have no idea they're celebrating. Only God could orchestrate that. And there's something that allows us to kind of move into and be able to share his story in a way that we don't get any other time of year. And I don't get bothered, you know. And I've told you guys before, I'll hear it again this year. I hear it every year, not from you guys, but from people who get all sideways about Christmas sometimes because they think it's too commercialized or something like that. I got news for you, man. If we get the world to start decorating for an event that they don't understand, so that we can come along behind them and help them understand what it's about, I'll take that every day of the week. I mean, I'd be two steps short of dumb not to take advantage of that. So I usually tell people, so if you gripe about it, I'll just take advantage of it. And I'll try to love people with the love of Jesus in the midst of their, in the midst of your grumbling. I'll find a way to figure out something else. It's an exciting time of year. Of course, kids love it. Our theme this year is Believe, by the way. You can pray. We're tackling a big project to kind of remodel our stage. In a couple weeks, you're going to see the black pipe and drape go up and a sign that says, "Don't open till Christmas." And we're actually going to try to construct our set, our backdrop, behind that black drop that you can't see during the Thanksgiving time of year, so we can unveil it that week after Thanksgiving as we hit December. And if it comes together, it's going to be awesome. And if it doesn't come together, it's going to look like poo. But we're going to take it. We're going to roll the dice and see if we can pull it off. So it should be fun. And so that's going to be our theme. But I want to take these next couple weeks, and again, we're going to share about Christmas. But realize what you just did, because this is important. And you talk about mountaintops and moments. You basically just let each other into your world a little bit. And you shared with this family some things about your family and the way that you celebrate, and those things are important to you. And that becomes a part of what we get to celebrate too. And that's part of what makes this time of year so amazing. And I'm going to invite you to go to Matthew 1. We still have a couple minutes. believe it or not, Matthew chapter 1. Verse 1. And then let's read, somebody read verse 1 through 17. Someone who's brave and feels loved and feels...
Nope.
Am I going to take a stab at that?
All right.
Go, Kimberly.
In my Christmas shirt. This is the record of the ancestors of Jesus the Messiah, a descendant of David and of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah was the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron was the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Amminadab. Amminadab was the father of Nahshon. Nahshon was the father of Salmon. Salmon was the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother was Bathsheba, the widow of Uriah. Solomon was the father of Rehoboam. Rehoboam was the father of Abijah. Abijah was the father of Asa. Asa was the father of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat was the father of Jehoram. Jehoram was the father of Uzziah. Uzziah was the father of Jotham. Jotham was the father of Ahaz. Ahaz was the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was the father of Manasseh. Manasseh was the father of Amon. Amon was the father of Josiah. Josiah was the father of Jehoiachin and his brothers born at the time of the exile to Babylon. After the Babylonian exile,
J. Jehoiachin was the father of Shealtiel. Shealtiel was the father of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was the father of Abiud. Abiud was the father of Eliakim. Eliakim was the father of Azor. Azor was the father of Zadok. Zadok was the father of Achim. Achim was the father of Eliud. Eliud was the father of Eleazar. Eleazar was the father of Methan. Methan was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Mary gave birth to Jesus, who was called the Messiah. All those listed above included 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the Babylonian exile, and 14 from the Babylonian exile to the Messiah.
Well done.
Wow.
Fantastic. Matthew's gospel, his account of the birth of Jesus, starts not with the well-known events of the Nativity itself, the star, the shepherds, the manger, but it begins in the midst of more ancient times, if you will. And it's easy to lose patience when you're reading the genealogy of Jesus, because you want to let your eyes kind of skip down the page to get to some real action, right? I mean, let's get on with something here. The begats are boring me, you know. But what you have to understand is that Christmas is not simply about a birth, but it's about a coming. God had planned for the arrival of Jesus even back as he created the earth. And as God puts this together and gives us the story, he foreshadowed who Jesus was going to be as we go back and look through the corridors of time to see where he came from. And believe it or not, you learn a lot more from the genealogy than you might think. And in Matthew, it is loaded with meaning about Christmas and how to celebrate Christmas and what it means. And we learn from what Matthew does say and from what Matthew doesn't say some things about Christmas. And so we've got 5 minutes here, 4 minutes, you know, 6 minutes, 7 minutes. So let me go ahead and begin by simply saying this, and something that you can learn at least about Christmas as you're getting ready to celebrate is simply this. The gospel is good news, not good advice. The gospel is good news, not good advice. Matthew does not begin the story of Jesus' birth by saying, once upon a time. That's not how it starts. It says, a record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. That's how it starts. Fairy tales, legends begin, often with the once upon a time. Myths begin with once upon a time. Star Wars begins with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But that's not the kind of account that Matthew gives us. We just read it. We just looked at it. It says, this is the genealogy of Jesus Christ. Your translation will say that in a variety of ways. But what that means is that he is grounding what Jesus does and who Jesus is in history. In other words, Jesus is not a metaphor. He's just not a religious figure that somebody made up. Matthew begins his account by making a strong, bold statement saying that Jesus is real and this is what happened. And here's why that's important. Advice is counsel about what you must do. News is a report of something that's already been done. Advice urges you to make something happen or tries to get you to take some kind of action. News urges you to recognize something that has already happened and respond to it. So this is not good advice. This is good news. This is not saying that you need to just kind of step out into nothingness and just kind of hold on to this because this is no different than any other story. This is something that is a report. It is news. It is factual. This is real. This is what happened. If you were to try to put it into a setting, let's say an invading army is coming toward a town. When there's an army coming toward that town, a town needs military advisors. It needs advice. It needs someone to tell them how they need to dig trenches, where they need to put earthworks. Marksmen should go up there. Tanks should go over there. But if a great king has intercepted and defeated the invading army, what does a town need then? It doesn't need military advisors. It needs messengers. And it needs someone to tell them the good news. The messengers don't come and say, here's what you need to do. They say, fear not. I have great news for you. The battle's been won. The king has come. Your life can be different. This is not good advice. This is not the kind of story where people kind of approach it and they go, well, you know, if it works for you, the Jesus thing, it's good. But for me, yeah, I can't buy into it. That's not what Matthew is saying. The reason that the Christmas story follows the genealogy is because Matthew, as a historian, as a storyteller, who is recounting a story, a real story, is anchoring it in history, and there's nothing in that genealogy that's an accident. Now, we won't get there tonight. But even the very last line that seems a little bit confusing, thus there were 14 generations in all from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile of Babylon, 14 from the exile to the Christ. There's a reason that's there. There's a reason that that notation, that verse is there. And believe it or not, that verse alone is loaded with everything that you need to remember about recognizing what it is that Christmas came to do. You say, I've never heard that before. We'll get there. Well, maybe not. This is only a 2-week session. Remind me next week, we'll come to it. But this biblical text is a text that recounts of what happened in history. It is easy at this time of year for some people that you're going to meet that will know the story of Jesus, but not necessarily believe the story of Jesus, to think that that there is kind of a moral to the story of the Nativity. There's not. You don't hear the Christmas story and go, and now, kids, the moral to the story is, you know, because again, you try to draw those kind of lessons out, I don't know where you end up. You know, but there's no moral to the story. The truth of the story is that this is a love story and you've been given the greatest gift you could ever be given. And Jesus has come and he's entered time and space. And God has decided to fulfill the promises. He's come to save you. Emmanuel, God is with us. And Christmas, of course, is just the beginning of the story. We know that. You know, I've made this statement before. Christmas gives us hope. Easter makes us heroes. It's still true. This is the hope part of the saga, the legacy of your story. This is where you have that chance of eternal life that we've been talking about on Sunday morning. This is where you get the invitation to start taking a life and taking a journey that is so much bigger than you are, that it goes beyond anything that you can ever imagine. And we get Christmas. And you say, well, you know, Jeff, usually on Wednesday nights we're kind of tying Sunday mornings into Wednesday nights. Yes, and so here, let me make the tie for you, because again, I know that you don't need me to, but I need to do it for myself sometimes. Christmas becomes that mountaintop for us. It becomes that moment where we get to reconnect once again to the amazing story of who Jesus is and what he's done, because from there we're going to connect the dots of our lives and we're going to keep moving forward again. Christmas reminds us again of what it is that we get to do, and we get that opportunity time and time again. In this particular time, as we look at this Christmas story, what I want to do over the next couple of weeks is really unpack it for you just a little bit, where we can at least anchor into it and get the foundation laid. Because again, we're going to come off of this and we're going to jump into 1st of December. We start a series called Believe, and we're going to talk about stuff that you already know. But for me, it's always great fun to go back and review it again and look at the Christmas story and hopefully say some things that will kind of make it come alive, where you can remember it and reconnect to it in a number of ways. But this is a story that for me reminds me of that moment, and again, it's going to get a little wonky here, but don't let it. You guys ever see the movie Hook that came out? Mm-hmm. Peter Pan movie about Hook? Mm-hmm. Okay. Maggie Smith plays an elderly Wendy from the Peter Pan story, if you're familiar with it at all. And she's addressing Robin Williams, who is a grown-up Peter Pan who has amnesia. And he's amused by the story that Wendy's telling the kids, and she looks right at him and says, Peter, the stories are true. You just don't. And this is a moment where I think, in the midst of what happens in our lives so often, that we get the opportunity to speak into a world, a human race, if you will, that has amnesia and has forgotten that this story is true. And I think in the lights and sometimes in the glitter and the glitz and in the busyness of it, it's easy to lose it. But we as followers, we don't forget that the story is true. This becomes our mountaintop. This becomes one of those moments that we anchor to that allow us to kind of move out and drive out into the air to tell the amazing stories and do the things that we do, to share in the Christmas store, to help people as they try to chase Christmas dreams, as we try to have the opportunity to kind of step into the world of others and celebrate. And we create traditions and moments and memories, and we kind of put them all in that book because it reminds us again of that amazing gift that God gave to us. And it's not an accident. It is not an accident that we live in a culture that can't seem to wait to get past Halloween just so we can start celebrating Christmas. You know, and it's funny. It seems like the stuff comes out in the stores earlier every year, but it doesn't. And the thing is, people gobble it up. I mean, if you saw something in Walmart 2 weeks ago and you think they're going to restock it, they're lying to you. Learn the lesson of the blue stockings. They never come back. Once they are gone, they are gone. And people will grab it and they will run with it and they want to hear the music. That's why Hallmark kicks over. They understand the industry. They understand the industry so well. There's now two Hallmark channels. They start the day after Christmas or after Halloween. They start running them 24 hours a day. The formula is always the same. And you know why they don't have to change the formula? Because it works. You know why? Because you can't screw Christmas up. Because you can't, no matter how hard you try, screw up Christmas. Because it's not yours to screw up. It's yours to live and it's yours to experience. And it all ties back into those verses that we just read. And Matthew lays it out and says, this really happened. It's a real event in history. And this is what you need to know. And believe it or not, woven in there, and we'll probably get them all in next week, there are all sorts of clues that help you unravel the mystery of Christmas. So better than any Hallmark movie, we are going to dig into the dirt and discover what's there. And now we're going to pray and you're going to go home. Let's pray. Jesus, we thank you that you give us a chance to celebrate Christmas. Oh, Heavenly Father, we know that nobody knows for sure the day you were born because, well, we don't have a senior birth certificate. And we realize that it's probably not December 25th, but it's a day that we've set aside to remember, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it allows us to get ready once again to speak into a world of people who are in the mood to celebrate and share and talk about love and light and to give them the real reason that we do it. And we know as we do that, just maybe, they'll hear, they'll understand, they'll discover you, and they'll believe. And so, Lord, I ask that you just be with us as we move into this season. Help us to move in boldly and confidently, ready for all the opportunities we're going to get. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.